Hey, I'm Dr. Pillay, and I want to talk to you about happiness in relationships. Happiness in relationships. You know, I know for most of you guys, you hear me say those words because that idea of being happy in a relationship sometimes is evasive. Sometimes my willingness and my desire to be happy in a relationship is undercut by another problem that's deceptive, another person that's deceptive. Sometimes it has to do with stress. Sometimes it has to do with all these invasive things that affect us on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of times, they're not things that you've chosen. They just sort of happen. I want to remind you this saying I have, which is work relationships are 90% facts and 10% feelings. Work relationships are 90% facts and 10% feelings. But love relationships are 90% feelings and 10% facts. How do I take a relationship, one that I want to be happy in, and how do I hold that relational happiness as such a high enough goal that my workaholism or my need to produce an income or the challenges and chores of my day-to-day life, which are necessary for me to pay the bills, don't invade that quality of this relationship in such a way that this relationship isn't going to work? It's not unusual for me to have somebody come in and want to talk to me after one of these lectures and say, Doc, I am so much in love and I miss her so bad and I'll do anything to get her back. And then in listening to this idea about I'll do anything for her to get back, I'll hear these long stories about how she's a slob, how she never picks up anything, and how all I've ever done in this relationship is try to execute some discipline, some notion of order. And as he begins to tell me the constant ways that he badgers, berates, blames that other person because the other person's lifestyle is so inappropriate that he feels that through criticism, I can fix this other person. See, often I find the same person that tells me I want to be in this relationship is also the same person that tells me that he's putting so much negative energy into this relationship that it's impossible for it to work. So I want to talk about happiness in relationships, and I want to get us to this idea of patterns, habits, and how those patterns and habits that have to do with a relationship, how they do embed ourselves into such a way that this relationship is not going to make it or it is going to make it. And if you will, one of the things that I find most often that people fail to recognize is that this whole idea of my mental energy, this whole idea of optimism and pessimism is all a decision of choice. Your decision to be an optimist or your decision to not be an optimist typically starts in the morning. What's your first thought when you wake up? Usually, what I have to do today. And because the brain can't tell the difference between a memory of a past negative event and what's going on right now, when I pull up all the unmet problems from yesterday, all the problems that I didn't solve, I find myself becoming increasingly negative because I'm bringing back from yesterday into today's notion the whole idea of all the crap I didn't do. More important in relationships that are running into trouble, relationships that get stuck in that nasty place, we often scorecard those things that are left over from yesterday that are not working for me. You know what a scorecard is? Scorecard is a list of things that I've never forgiven you for. And when you allow yourself the pattern of processing those ideas, those notions, those things that were left over from yesterday that are negative about your partner, we tend to build up and build up internal negative energy to the point that our anger becomes explosive. You know, I was telling the group before here, I had a client that had some problems with their child who couldn't get homework done. And you know, the idea that the pattern was for her to go home and say, is your homework done? How did you do so far? And the pattern in place was for him to acknowledge that the homework had been done when in fact it hadn't. So initially when this problem developed, they had choices. I'm going to ask you if it's done, and if it's not done, I'm going to check your homework, and if you're having problems, I'll find a tutor, and if that ain't working, then we'll find some other solution. But initially, in fact, when problems first develop, it's always about I have choices. I don't have to be angry automatically. But what happens when this is not the first time that my child's homework wasn't done? And it's not the second time that my child's homework is not done. And the third, by the time we get to the fourth time, we become explosive. Think about yourself meeting somebody for lunch. The first time they're late, No big deal. The second time they're late, a little bit of annoyance. The third time they're late, now I'm really frustrated. The fourth time they're late, now I'm losing it. I'm out of my gourd. So the idea that taking past negative events and moving into the present moment, and that compounds to where now I'm not just angry about the thing you did, I'm angry about the pattern of the thing you've done to such an extent, now I'm explosive. Now I'm in the habit of being angry at you. Patterns, habits, addictions. You know, when we look at relational habits that work, some of those ones that work have to do with how well do I cherish that notion that love is a process, not a destination. It's an assertive dedication to problem solve that we may stay together. I want you to think about that. Well, it's a process. Assertive dedication to problem solve in developing a lifestyle that we may stay together. That person that had reflected to me all of the things that was wrong with his partner wasn't assertively dedicated to problem solve. See, that's the key. It's not just blaming. It's not just bringing up the past from yesterday that's not resolved today. It's bringing up the problem from yesterday that I hope to solve today. And in solving this problem, I'm not developing a habit in this relationship that embeddedly causes it to end. You know, a few weeks ago, I was teaching this class on being happy, just to be happy. And one of the notions I gave was that optimism doesn't guarantee success, but pessimism guarantees failure. Optimism doesn't guarantee success, but pessimism guarantees failure. Are you optimistic in your present relationship? And if you are, what does it look like? If in fact you really believe this is your soulmate, remember? Acquaintances become friends, friends become roommates, roommate becomes companions, companions become lovers. If you truly are in love with that person, and we go back to dedicating myself to problem solve that we may stay together, then I would tell you right now, you're wasting your time to tell me all the information that would prove to me that she's an idiot and you're not. You're wasting your time. Because in identifying all the problems that weren't solved, you've also identified to me that you weren't dedicated. Remember, love is a process, not a destination. Love is a process. Assertive dedication. One of the hardest things to do in any relationship that you want to work is to remain committed. Committed. Now I'll ask you what commitment is, and I'll get different ideas about what that is, but I will tell you that most people understand what commitment is for roommates. When I ask you, what is it to be committed to a roommate relationship, you will say, well, I'm committed to share space, to protect your valuables, and to problem solve enough that we can live together in the same household. Interesting. Very easy notion. But then when I change that and bring it up a level, and I say, now we're above roommates. Now we're at that companion or love level. How is it different? What kind of commitment does it take that's beyond a roommate that gets you to that next level, companion or lover? What's the difference? And a lot of people are confounded by that because we're very used to blaming and criticizing our partner that has violated our boundaries like it's a temporary relationship. But if a love relationship is not temporary, if it's for life, what's the difference between roommates and lovers? And the biggest, go ahead.
Companions or lovers are emotionally invested in each other.
You know, what was just said is that the biggest difference is that roommates aren't emotionally invested, but companions or lovers are emotionally invested. Now, I'm going to help you with that term because it's kind of vague to me. What does it mean to be emotionally invested? And I'm going to bring you back to that statement I just made about work relationships are 90% facts and 10% feelings, and love relationships are 90% feelings and 10% facts. That notion that you can win the battle but lose the war, that idea that we can argue so much and you can collect information to prove me wrong, but in proving me wrong, you've done something that I truly regret. I've done something that I truly regret, and that is you fell out of love with me. You fell out of love with me. The emotional bond. I'm emotionally intimate with you. Now, this is heavy, so you can take notes if you want. But I have to tell you, most of you in this room are not prepared to be emotionally intimate. Most of you in this room are not prepared to be emotionally intimate. Because when I ask you to be emotionally intimate, I'm going to first of all ask you to step back just for a little bit and understand what those words mean. The word emotion is started off alphabetically with the E, and I'll capitalize it because it means energy. Energy of motion. The other day, I'm watching TV with my son. We were deer hunting, and it started off with a horror flick. And unlike where we have a cable box where we can rewind or fast forward, it was horrible. Whatever we turned on to that channel, because it was in a hotel room, was absolutely the most deprived, decadent scene of blood and gore. And I couldn't find a controller fast enough to turn it off. Emotionally, it was disruptive, disgusting, discouraging. And right now, I can think about those one or two scenes I saw and immediately realize how that horrible event was. But there I was, disdain. Wanted to jump up, get away from it, turn it off, get rid of it. Emotions, energy in motion. When you're fearful or you dislike something, there's no question you're not going back. And when you tell me you fell out of love and all of your friends in the world are trying to help you to make it, sustain it, it don't matter. Because once you've fallen out of love, you might as well hit your fingers with a claw hammer. You don't want to do this. You're not going to do it. I can't be talked out of it. But the idea of energy is in motion. The idea that fear is an energy in motion. The idea that love, some positive sense of well-being. You know, recently, my grandkids were up in New York. Excuse me, they were in Arizona for a couple of weeks. And they've lived with me for now for a year. Every morning I see them go to school. And every day I experience the joy, the happiness, and also the disruptive, you know, the idea of the dishes not being done. And one more time, do I have to raise my voice? But there it is, this bubble, this rubble of up and down. But something had happened during the year that they've been there. I bonded to them like I've never bonded before. They have never been living with me before. And I was surprised that they were gone, and I really missed them. I really missed them. So much so that when I got a call that they were at the airport, I was tracking the car. Where are you now? Gandy, call me again when you get closer. And I have on my phone a video of that car pulling up and me hugging those kids, and I am weeping. Weeping. Emotions, energies in motion, connections, bonds, energies in motion. But it's not enough that you emotionally connect to people, because I gave you one example of how it was good, and I gave you another example about, no, I don't want to see that done again. But you got to go to the next word, emotional intimacy. Intimacy, private and confidential places in you that help me to understand you. Private and confidential places in intimacy. You know, there's no man in this room that hasn't had something in his life that hasn't occurred, that when I listen to your heartfelt gut being in touch with that experience, that won't buckle you under and I'll be crying with you. All of us have lived through tragedy and overcome huge problems that you yourself should be proud of. And if I was aware of it, I'd be proud of you too. But when I move above that idea of a roommate, remember sharing space, paying rent, dishes, dirty laundry, and I move to a higher level, and that challenge from being emotionally intimate with you requires that I have to know enough about you that you make sense to me. And so a few years ago, a friend of mine was having some issues and we were walking. And I made time for him every day that we would walk on Bayshore. And as he disclosed to me the troubles he was having and overcome the separation with his partner. The separation with his partner was involved because there was a non-biological child that wasn't his, but he had become so attached to that child. Remember me telling you about my grandkids? I got really connected in 1 year. You know, they've never spent this time with me, and for the most part, they've never lived in this state afar. I was really surprised, weeping. But now as we're walking and he's telling me the story about how he can't seem to resolve the problems, remember, commitment, I will problem solve that we may stay together. What happens when your partner leaves you and you're not given to be a part of the problem to solve? What happens when your partner has problems that are so immense in their own personal life that it undercuts the very future of your relationship, the relationship you want to problem solve for, but you don't have a choice. You're not involved with the problem. Now I'm going to get back to that idea of intimacy, because as we walk each day and he explained to me his feelings for the son that wasn't his and his heartfelt ache of how much he missed that boy, and as we talked about his life going back to maybe 10 years, guess what happened? I was emotionally intimate with him. He was emotionally intimate with me. And later in life when he met somebody else, and that partner had children, and he talked to me about the joy he had of fulfilling his need to be a father, even though they weren't his. I understood that. I understood that more than what you might, because you might think it was just like a Cub Scout meeting or a Boy Scout group, but it wasn't. It was meaningful to him because it affected his identity as not just a partner, but as a father. And he was able to relish in that whole idea of a new level of relationship that he was happy. But this time, he was better than the last one because he had listened to some of my materials and now knew this relationship was much better. See, that's one of the byproducts you get of listening to what I have to tell you. Sometimes you're going to look at where you are and you're going to say, oh my God, am I off base? I'm not sure I can fix this. Because sometimes it's not up to you. Remember I said commitment? Assertive dedication between two people to develop a lifestyle. I gave you some examples about this, or at least the notion that sometimes your desire for this relationship to work is undercut by the other person's life problems that aren't, you're not a part of them. And sometimes we get into relationships too fast. We really didn't know our partner. We understand them only for the time that we spent together as roommates. But wait a second, go back to what I just told you. I was living with my grandkids for 9 months, and guess what I did? Bond. Is it possible to you to bond to someone that you've met, dated, courted with, and living in a roommate, and truly not know enough to be emotionally intimate, and find yourself in heartache that they're gone when it didn't work? And now you're using the word love, and it ain't love. Why? Because you weren't emotionally intimate. How could you be in love with someone you didn't know and understand? What happened? Well, you're a Homo sapien. You're a member of the animal kingdom. And a lot of times, because we work hard and we want to play hard, we find ourselves living with people that fill the space, fill the need. I'm not alone anymore. I have a meaning and identity. We're a couple. But unfortunately, also comes with that, how much time did you take to learn enough about them that emotionally you understand them, that you understand you're not just a piece to the puzzle to fill an emptiness, but rather you are a willful decision to include you in my life together as a relationship, and I want to have a future with you. Too many people today find themselves walking the walk because there was nobody else around. They didn't pick the partner. They didn't. It just sort of happened. I'm working, you're working, we get together, we have fun. Gosh, we stay together one day at a time, and wow. So when I talk about relational happiness, I'm going to tell you something that I think all of us need to eliminate from our repertoire of trickery, and that is scorecarding. I should not and will not participate in any endeavor that criticizes you for past actions. I will not scorecard you. I will not bring up the past for the purpose of beating you down or advertising to someone else some inadequacy. Remember when I started this? The brain can't tell the difference between a memory of a past negative event and happening right now. When I scorecard you, I relive it. And when I relive it, I bring it into the present moment. So this argument we had 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, maybe 2 years ago, is still actively involved in my life because there I am scorecarding. Bring it up. Worst of all, in toxic relationships that are denied happiness, we find the partner squirrel cages. They spin and spin and spin and think and think and rethink, and they radiate this negative energy because all they're processing is everything that went wrong or is wrong with you, and they're not working on themselves. The third thing we find that is absolutely vital to relationship is the recognition that an emotionally intimate relationship requires me to bond in a way that's positive. An emotional relationship bond positive. Your brain is a battery, electrical device. When in fact someone's pronounced brain dead, it's because they've put up electrical devices and there's no electricity. And when there's no electricity, they said, oh, we can stop the lung machine. Because the organism is alive, but the brain is dead. But the idea that when you invest in your own optimism through positive thought processes and create within your own mind a certain desire to prolong or at least invest in a positive relationship, it is a decision. So as I talk to you about this notion of patterns, habits, I'll tell you one thing that's highly destructive and I see all the time. The silent treatment. I'm so mad at you internally, my brain is so filled through scorecarding and squirrel caging that I can't spit. So I know violence doesn't work. Hit, strike, or punch, throwing things, breaking things, that just gives you bad memories. We call those black book memories. When people say things that aren't forgivable, you bring it to mind, you relive it, it's nasty, it's negative. I don't want to go there, so guess what I'm going to do? I'm just going to be quiet. I'm not going to say a word. I'm not going to say anything. It's a punishment technique that's meant to punish you in such a way that you know I'm angry, but by removing myself from you in an emotional relationship, you suffer. The silent treatment is an awful way that people try to win arguments because you can't force me to talk to you. You can't force me to talk to you or make you feel good. You're going to feel bad about yourself all by yourself. And it's just going to happen. So when you see that idea of in nonviolent relationships, people choose emotional violence through the silent treatment, I will tell you that's probably 50% of the clients I work with. 50% of the clients have never hit, strike, or punch, but boy, can they do that silent treatment. But when I ask you to begin the notion of not being quiet, and if I tell you it's absolutely vital to problem solve that we may stay together, remember commitment? Notion of love. Love is a process, not a destination. It's an assertive dedication to problem solve that we may stay together. How do I address problems in such a way that's about the solution and not about who caused it? How do I surface problems to you in a positive environment that has to do with solving the problem and getting rid of it? And unless you can learn to do that, you can forget that your relationship ever gets beyond roommates. Remember roommates? Now, I mentioned to you before, the one quality that gets a relationship above roommate is emotional intimacy. You can live with somebody forever and never be emotionally intimate. You do your share, I do mine, and that's all we have to worry about. But then, A plus B equal AB. See, the genetics of the mom plus the genetics of the dad gives me a child that's a compromise between the genetics of both of you. And those children have to flourish in an emotionally intimate relationship. They have to and can only exist if there's love. And when children are raised in households which have the silent treatment, it is emotionally, absolutely destructive to the personality development of those children. But what happens when mom and dad learn to identify problems, work on solutions, build those solutions into such a way that the children learn problem solving? You know what happens? Those kids are launched typically having happy, healthy relationships. And if they don't have one, I'll tell you my experiences is the odds are in their favor. But also, I will tell you the other side of the story. And that when mom and dad never fight, and they stay together as roommates for long periods of time, guess what happens to those kids? They hook up with poor problem-solving techniques in relationships that they typically are passive participants. See, the silent treatment is just that. Silent treatment. I am passive to you because I'm not going to assert myself. So those kids learn to be passive in their new relationships. And then they find themselves getting in a relationship because they were selected more than they selected. And now we find this whole problem all over again. Because now my AB is involved in a relationship that really doesn't have a foundation of personal growth. Yeah?
Isn't that pretty much the definition of passive aggressive?
When we talk about passive aggressive, that's what the notion was, in case you didn't pick it up. What is the definition of passive aggressive? When we talk about anger, you can be aggressive, you can be passive, but there's a term we call passive aggressive. And the passive aggressive is when I am passive to you for the purpose of punishing you. Now, the reason it's passive is because when I'm emotionally bonded to you, I depend on you to be there for emotional intimacy. And when you pull that emotional intimacy away from me, I suffer. Because that's the only difference in quality between a roommate and a lover.
Right.
Emotional intimacy is the only difference. I've exposed enough of myself to you. Or here's another one. You and I have met and we've been through enough life together that the experiences of our life have brought us both emotionally intimate events that now we have built a new relationship. If that makes sense to you. A plus B equal AB. The birth of a baby, that's an emotionally intimate event. I was there when Tyler was born. I can weep when looking at that video and how the first time I held my son. And so as you accumulate emotionally intimate events in your life, yeah, it's quite possible that your relationship has truly gone. But what happens when in the history of this relationship, there's been no emotional intimacy? What happens if we met today and we started living together and at the end of 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, all of a sudden I found out who you really are? Yeah, that sucks, and I see that happen a lot. Relational happiness is about doing things that add positive energy. Relational happiness is about doing things that can bring about emotional intimacy and about those things that stay away from scorecarding, squirrel caging, and I'm going to mention one more, and if you will, we'll call it codependence. Just one I want to put out there. I find about 30% of all the couples I work with are codependently involved. Codependently involved. Let me explain what I mean. I get so involved in your life that I don't live my own life. And then my anger at you is because you're not behaving in ways that I think you should behave to fix yourself. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
And I see a lot of men that will come here, especially to my groups like I have today, that will go through great lengths to tell me all about all the things she's done wrong and all the behaviors that she displays that are truly self-destructive, and in the same paragraph, their intentions are to prove to me she's crazy, but by proving to me she's crazy, I'm a better man. And I will tell you, my bottom line to that, if you've proved to me that you're arguing with a nut, well, who's the nut? You are. Why? Well, if you know you're a nut, you know she's a nut, you're arguing with them, you're more crazy than she is. Okay? Hey, I want you to think about these ideas. I'm a big believer in emotional intimacy. I'm a big believer in love relationships. I'm a big believer in commitment. I will spare an emotional energy to problem solve and developing a relationship that we may stay together. I tell you, it takes work. There's no easy. I'm not a big believer in a love at first sight. No, I think you were desperate. I think your life was really a mess. And I think there are those glimmering moments where we go through that idea of courtship. You know, what's the best sex you ever had?
Makeup
sex. And sometimes when our life is truly one of isolation and abandonment, where you're at the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, and you do meet somebody that makes you feel good, you know, I'm all for that. The only problem is don't confuse that with passion. You know, that idea that it's not really love, it might be
lust.
Yeah, lust. Okay, might be the honeymoon effect, might be the rebound effect. But what I want you to focus on, love is a process, not a destination. It's an assertive dedication to problem solving, developing a lifestyle that we may stay together. Thank you.